include repeated attacks. We've got going on right now a couple of bombs. One bomb goes off in New York City. It's a miracle it doesn't kill anybody. It's in a dumpster. The other bomb is about a couple of blocks away, maybe, and they discovered that one. That one was a pressure cooker bomb, and maybe this one was as well. You had an attempted bombing of a Marines race that, you know, and the problem is, and I'm sure it's in the name of not alarming people, but the authorities are not only are they not telling what happened exactly, they're not drawing the links together, they're not connecting the dots. And the problem with that is that people are connecting the dots on their own, and they're wondering why the government is refusing, for example, to call this a terrorist event. Bill de Blasio, who's a Marxist, is from what I understand, an open Marxist or an admitted Marxist, and he's not willing to call it terrorism. But, you know, it's kind of leadership, and it's the leadership that unfortunately, Hillary Clinton herself represents, is this sense of the sense that we're, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what it is. Ultimately, it alarms people and upsets them when they think that the government is holding back information that's obvious. And, you know, there is, of course, you know, too much information. There is such a thing as too much information. But people are very afraid. They feel like the government has become complicit in these bombings and these terror attacks because they're not doing everything they can to stop them, or it seems like they're not. For example, letting the border stay open in the south of the United States. And they're letting in these people, and they're doing, and Obama has stated he's bringing in as many Syrians as he possibly can without any real explanation other than that that's the kind of a country we are. Obviously, some of the people he's bringing in, everybody knows, every single person knows, even the president certainly has admitted that some of these people are undoubtedly will be terrorists. All right, so here's some headlines for you. Wanted Ahmad Khan Rahami, naturalized citizen from Afghanistan. Device explodes outside of New Jersey train station. That's not too long ago. Triple strike puts Manhattan on alert for UN summit. Bigger than ever police presence. We're at a level of alert city has never seen before. Mysterious incidents raise alarms. Cuomo, foreign connection. Governor Cuomo. Flip phone detonators. Surveillance footage shows man dragging bag between locations. Fears of active terrorist cell. That's the real issue here. 100,000 Somali refugees admitted to the United States since 9/11. And one in five Syrian refugees has resettled in New York City area. ISIS releases brutal propaganda video after this. And Khan of Londonistan, the mayor of London, comes to the United States and throws out a first pitch, and he's already done things like banned women in bikinis on the tube, the underground. So we don't know how many people are involved in this thing, but there has to be a fair number. Now, the guy that did the stabbing in Minnesota, this is obviously all coordinated. When people see a coordinated attack, the government doesn't really want to admit it. It's upsetting to them because they say to themselves, what else is the government hiding from us? And why does the government not come out and more strongly condemn Islamic terrorism or radical Islam or Islam? Now, here is from Minnesota Mall.
Back this time in St. Cloud, Minnesota, authorities are now investigating the stabbing of 9 people at Crossroads Center Mall this weekend. A Mali man dressed as a private security guard entered the shopping center and went on a rampage. He wielded what appears to be a kitchen knife before being shot and killed by an off-duty police officer. The city's police chief says a man reportedly made a reference to Allah and asked the victim if he or she was Muslim. None of the injured victims suffered life-threatening wounds.
In my opinion, what these guys want to do is they want to have a terrorist attack. They want somebody to be killed in each state so that people understand that there is no place to hide. Here's a little bit more from Fox News on this attack.
In the investigation of that street explosion here in New York City last night, a law enforcement source telling Fox News that the explosive devices found in Manhattan and that pipe bomb that exploded yesterday morning and several devices that did not detonate, they were targeting that charity run benefiting our U.S. Marines, well, they were from the same person. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo this morning calling the Manhattan attack an act of terrorism, but says there is no evidence at this time of a connection to international terrorism. That blast injured 29 people in a crowded Manhattan neighborhood of Chelsea on the west side of Manhattan. Police later using a robot to safely remove a second pressure cooker type device from a garbage can that was four blocks north of the first explosion. That device now being examined at a police facility in the Bronx. New York Mayor Bill de Blasio vowing to find those who are responsible.
We're going to be very careful and patient to get to the full truth here. We are not going to jump to conclusions. We're not going to offer you easy answers. We're going to make sure we have all the facts. We know there was a bombing. That much we do know. We know it's a very serious incident.
And on the other side of the Hudson River in Seaside Heights, New Jersey, getting back to normal a bit today, all the beaches have reopened in the New Jersey shore town that were closed after that explosion yesterday. The immediate area was put on lockdown and several homes have been evacuated following that attack. The blast coming right before the start of that 5K race benefiting Marines that was set to start, but it thankfully was delayed. That's why no one was hurt.
All right, so what's the difference in your mind? What difference would it make to you if it was international terrorism or local terrorism? Is that something that you would draw a distinction to? I mean, you know, it would be nice to have somebody different in charge who's not afraid to just stand up and say the things that are on people's minds, you know? 523-1450, and we'll come back and I'll read you some more headlines and we'll get into some more news. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523-1450, and 805-61802. Text in. We'll be back. And the A train, by the way, is a train in New York City. I thought it would be appropriate. Duke Ellington, working with Billy Strayhorn, puts out a lot of these great songs. Well, the president stays silent on the bombings, doesn't say anything. The Somali who went on the attack in Minnesota was an ISIS fanatic. And now there is concern about the number of foreign Muslims who've been relocated in Minnesota and other cities. He wore a security uniform. Navy mandatory transgender training. Is that what we need to be the number one military in the world? What is gained out of all of the trans focus that I realize the speaking Obama that the federal government has put so much emphasis on? U.S. made two wire payments before sending $1.7 billion in cash. There is some claim out there we could get around $33 billion. Now, wouldn't it be interesting to trace that money to Americans killed in foreign countries or in this country? Venezuela, 15% in garbage to survive. It's a totally failed state. It's socialism. If you want to know what socialism looks like, it's the government dabbling and really just getting involved in every part of the economy, every part of the government. The only person with a real say in anything is the government. And so that's what you have. You have the number one largest. And if you're thinking, why wouldn't it be great to live in an economy where we had almost a near monopoly on an important product? That's Venezuela. They don't have a monopoly, but they have the number one world's greatest amount of oil reserves. Or should I say oil in ground, oil in the ocean, and they still can't feed their people. 15% of the people there are eating garbage. Now, it's so important in these socialist countries for the government to stay in power that it doesn't matter if their people die, right? Because it's the government. The whole point is the government is the only thing that's important. That's the exact opposite of what the founders wanted. We've built the greatest, arguably the greatest nation in history, and now they want to change it into socialism or push it towards socialism. That's the leadership that we have, and that's what we're fighting against. New York Times, crucial details omitted, discordant accounts on Hillary's health. I'll get into that later. Clinton is losing Hispanics, according to the Washington Post. LA Times, Trump is now at his biggest lead. He's shattering records with donors, believe it or not, this billionaire. 50 days till this plays out. Roger Goodell, head of the NFL, is so proud of the political protests that are being given in the NFL. Of course, the most important thing is protests, not have a flag up. I'll be shocked if they don't eventually cancel this Spangled Banner before the games because, you know, the most important thing is the protesters. Tiny implants storing information beneath people's skin, replacing keys, stores medical documents. And toxic algae is now troubling California. We've seen it out in Florida. Biologist claiming that he found trichomes. I read about the article, and he's claiming this is Jesus' wife and his son buried. So take that with a grain of salt. North Dakota oil fields coming back to life because of the oil reaching $40 a barrel. Go get euthanized. You may not be old enough to choose to have sex. You can go decide to die, to be killed. 640 Kelly O'Connell. We'll be right back. All right, so with that in the background, in New York, in New Jersey, and in Minnesota, seems coordinated. Now, in the meantime, this is just hard to believe, and I did predict it on the Friday show. The Electoral College has been tied to Trump. He's actually won it. Now, this is not according to Real Clear Politics. This is according to Reuters Ipsos. States of Nation, and they have him ahead, absolutely standing. He's moving. He is gaining strength. And so the question is, what exactly is going to slow him down? I don't see it slowing him down. You know, the Hillary game, and I should do this for you. I had pretty much an entire show put together already before all this bombing stuff started off, but here is, because I got kind of a kick out of it, a morbid kick. I do not wish Hillary any harm. I hope she recovers, but I mean, I think there needs to be some honesty from the Clinton campaign about what's going on with her. There's no way. And experts agree there is no way that Hillary has pneumonia. Check this out. Here is Hillary. This guy uses, I'm not saying he borrowed it from me, but zombie Hillary nearly faints again during press event in New York City on the bombings.
We've got some breaking news for you now. The Hillary Death Watch continues here at the Next News Network during Selection 2016. Now, Hillary came out looking like a zombie last night during a presser on that New York City event in Chelsea. Now, it was following the reports of a device in a dumpster. Hillary gave a short press conference, and immediately her demeanor set the web ablaze with people asking some very serious questions, again, related to her ability to lead in a time of crisis and, most importantly, her crippling health condition.
One thing I would like to ask you is what difference does it make what Hillary has done in the past if she's incapacitated or at times incapacitated? Man, I had a really detailed show in which I was going to play for you. I might get to it. But Parkinson's symptoms and Parkinson's treatment, which a lot of people are saying her treatment sounds like. And one of the things, just to let you know, that is associated with Parkinson's is there's drugs that they give these people, but there's on and off phases. There's when the drugs are working better and when they're working worse. And as time goes by, as with most drugs, the drugs are not as effective, but it could explain a lot. I mean, sometimes she seems chipper. Other times like this, she just seems like an absolute zombie.
Take a look.
I've been briefed about the bombings in New York and New Jersey.
I mean, you can barely hear her. She looks like she just woke up. Her eyes are kind of half open. I mean, she is just mailing it in, you know?
Attack in Minnesota. Obviously, we need to do everything we can to support our first responders. Also, to pray for the victims. We have to let this investigation unfold. We've been in touch with various officials, including the mayor's office in New York, to learn what they are discovering as they conduct this investigation. And I'll have more to say about it when we actually know some facts.
Secretary, do you have any reaction to the fact that Donald Trump, immediately upon taking the stage tonight, called the explosion in New York a bomb and said that to the crowd?
Well, I think it's important.
So they asked Hillary, they said, during the bombing tonight, do you have a problem with Donald Trump saying that it was a bomb? And Hillary just doesn't even catch that. She just goes, well, I think it's important not to overreact. But you can barely hear her. She looks like she just got up out of bed. I mean, it was terrible. Absolutely terrible. And it gave the sense that she is sick, that she's disinterested. This is what I don't get. I don't understand how the Democrats are happy with themselves over this candidate. Let's just say at one time you could make an argument that she was just a spectacular person. She was a spectacular political player or thinker, or, you know, that she and her feminism were ready to tackle the world. I think those days are gone. No matter who she was, even the greatest person has a period of time when they lose strength, when they lose focus, when they start getting sick. And I think clearly Hillary has passed her sell-by date by years. And she supposedly hates Obama because he beat her. He's going to hate Trump even more if he beats her. And it looks to me like he's getting better and better positioned for a win. I mean, it just seems like everything is breaking perfectly for Trump right now. It's kind of fascinating to watch it. And I'm pulling up here. Oh, here, got it right here. Trump is up 41.1 to 47.8. So in some polls, he's up by 7. In this one, he's up by 6. But this is the LA Times. He's up in all of these polls. Trump is up tied, statistical tie or ahead in virtually every battleground state. And the Washington Post, with its gaslighting approach, is still saying that, you know, Hillary's favored. She's ahead in certain battlegrounds. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense how the media's handling this. Let's take a break and we'll be right back. 6:50, Kelly O'Connell. And you're listening to AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOBE. 523-1450 to call in and 805-6180 to text. All right. So these attacks are going to keep happening. And so how does it affect the election? Well, I don't think it helps the party in power, which Hillary is seen as a continuation of, because I believe that people are going to look at what's happened in the last 8 years and say that it's quite possible that the government could have done a lot more, could have a different attitude. Now, I do think also that people are going to say it really bothers me that the president seems to have a lot of sympathy for Islam, and he refuses to get up and make statements when things like this happen. It's frustrating to me. Well, I think for a lot of people, it doesn't sound like Obama is enthusiastic about America. He goes over to countries and insults Americans or denigrates us somehow, and always he's up the problem. He's above the problem. And where's the president? The president doesn't seem like a wartime leader. Now, here is a clip on one of the big differences between Hillary and Trump voters. Trump voters have, according to some of the analysts, have a lot more enthusiasm.
Well, you got everybody's attention with that one.
Can't excite Hillary Clinton voters.
Katie, talk about what you see at a Trump event. There is excitement at Trump events, but there was excitement at Cherry events in 2004, too.
There's a lot of excitement at Trump events. And I will say this about what Alex is mentioning. We would see Trump voters in -5 degree snowy temperatures in Iowa for hours on end, 6 hours. To go see Donald Trump at a rally. My question is, are they going to wait in line to vote for Trump if there are long lines at the polling stations? Yeah, I think so. Are Hillary Clinton voters going to take a day off work and wait in lines? And that is the big question. The excitement level is a little bit different on the Trump side because they are so enthusiastic about him.
Let me sneak in another quick break. We'll be back in 45 seconds.
All right, so that's part of it, but I think that people are... they're concerned. I mean, it's kind of a two-sided coin. Some people are excited by Trump because he gets up and he pushes back on political correctness. He gets up and is unafraid to say things that are challenging, and they think, well, there's something that I have that I don't like about what's going on in the U.S. right now. There's a good chance Trump will stand up and say something about my things. Or they might just say, you know, they see the America going down the toilet and that Trump will be the person to stop the flushing. Now, on the other hand, you've got, I would think, an increasing number of people concerned about Hillary who find her and her husband's explanations of what the foundation was doing. And it just came out over the weekend. I saw a report, 5.7% of the income last year of the charity was used for charitable activity. So I think people are looking at Hillary and they're going between the scandals of the emails and the foundation and all the other stuff, her and her friend Huma, and her health. What's going on with her health? She just doesn't look healthy. She certainly doesn't look healthy enough to step into the White House right now. And is she going to get better? And I think they look at these two things and it's kind of a perfect storm. And while Hillary has supposedly kind of been resting up to get better, the question is she just very, very sick and people who are working with her not only don't want to admit it, but it's their plan to use this sickness to their benefit. In other words, to get somebody elected who then has to step aside and then they can put whoever else that they want in, whether it's Kane or I don't know what exactly, you know, the plan would be. We've been through a couple of scenarios, but just weird days. Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton tied across battleground states, according to the CBS News poll. Nevada, Arizona, Colorado, Iowa, Wisconsin, Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Virginia, North Carolina, Georgia, Florida, New Hampshire. He's actually up in most of these, even when the media gets up and says, does these articles that we're talking about, gaslighting articles that they're putting out there. The truth is that the only strength right now in this campaign is the growth of the Trump campaign and his numbers. And so the question is, what is going to happen to slow him down? And if he doesn't slow down, how does Hillary stop him from winning in a landslide? As I said, I think at some point he's going to be up 10 or 15 points, and it's going to be a snoozer. But he's up by 7 now, and he's come from nowhere. He's come up 10 points easy, 10 or 12, 15 points already. Anyway, we'll take a break on the hour. Kelly O'Connell, 523, 1450 on AM Las Cruces, and we'll be back. And I've got some health issue stuff for Hillary when we come back and some local news. All right, so we do have the news that the baby Brianna Killer, the mother, is to be let out of prison. And at 7:06, we're reporting on that. Check this out. And just a second here, I just got to burn off an ad that's associated with this, but this is from KVIA, and a lot of people are upset. And here we go with this.
Before her first birthday, this Valentine's Day, baby Brianna would have turned 14 years old. The case out of Las Cruces gained national attention in 2002. Baby Brianna Lopez was beaten, bitten, burned, and raped by her own family. You're watching ABC 7 at 5. I'm Rick Cabrera.
And I'm Estela Casas. Before being elected governor of New Mexico, Susana Martinez was the district attorney who led the case against baby Brianna's torturers.
Brianna's autopsy showed bruises, broken bones, bite marks, and sexual abuse. In 2003, Martinez prosecuted, convicted, and sent her family to prison. Brianna's father, Anthony Walters, and her uncle, Stephen Lopez, were sentenced to more than 50 years in prison. The baby's mother, Stephanie Lopez, was sentenced to 27 years in prison. ABC 7's New Mexico Mola Newsroom has learned Lopez is set to be released from prison later this year after having served half her sentence. Evan Fullen joins us live with reaction. Evan?
Rick and Estela, after serving half of her 27-year prison sentence, Stephanie Lopez is expected to be released from prison on September 9th.
To her sentence, the judge will order the terms and conditions along with the period that she's been sentenced to. But the Department of Corrections fulfills that commitment by ensuring that she meets the requirements along with the time specifications by law.
I'm disappointed, you know, but the law is the law. There's not much you can do about it. She served her time. If she's been good, she deserves the credit that she gets, and she's going to be out. It's just shocking that somebody could have a child as beautiful as that little girl was and allow what happened to happen to her.
Ms. Susan Riedel, the prosecutor.
New Mexico's deputy director of adult prison says Stephanie Lopez must be released by law. She has fulfilled her required time in prison, and upon her release, she'll be placed on parole. If Lopez violates her parole, she would then return to prison to serve an additional 2 years. Now, this Sunday would have marked baby Brianna's 14th birthday. Community members are welcome to come out here where I am right now, the Doña Ana Cemetery, to pay respects with song and prayer. Reporting live from our New Mexico Mobile Newsroom, Evan Follin, ABC 7.
All right, so I guess you can't unring a bell that she got the sentence that she got, and there is really nothing to be done about it. Can't prosecute her twice. Here is from here is a little bit on the 10-year anniversary from KRWG News, and this is from 2012.
Died on July 19th, 2002, when she was only 5 months old. Investigators say she had been beaten, bitten, raped, and thrown around like a football by her father and uncle. Considered the worst child abuse case in New Mexico history, baby Brianna changed child abuse laws.
Oh, they push for law that if you killed your child, it would be...
This is Amy Orlando.
...be the same as if you killed a stranger, and that would be a life sentence, so 30 years, and technically New Mexico is considered life.
Father Andrew Walters was sentenced to 63 years in prison. Her uncle Stephen Lopez got 57 years. Brianna's mother, Stephanie Lopez, is expected to be released in 2016. Governor Susana Martinez, who was the district attorney at the time, prosecuted the case. Martinez said Brianna was bruised from head to toe, skull fractures, broken ribs, and there was evidence that she was raped. The case inspired the 2005 Baby Brianna Law. It added the possibility of a life sentence for the death of anyone younger than 12. As Governor Martinez is now pushing even tougher legislation.
And the new legislation that she's trying to pass is all children, so anyone under the age of 18.
All right, so here's another clip from KTSM Channel 9, remembering Brianna 10 years later, same basic date.
Well, obviously, many of us did not even know baby Brianna, but I remember covering this story when it happened 10 years ago, and I remember feeling sadness, like many of those in our community, and anger that someone could be capable of such abuse. But there's one person in particular who was deeply impacted by Brianna and vowed that her death would not be in vain, and that is New Mexico Governor Susana Martinez. This is the place where baby Brianna took her last breath. She was living inside this mobile home with 8 other people in crowded conditions, and for this innocent little baby girl, living in unthinkable conditions.
And this baby had actually been abused since she was born.
The night before she died, her own family, her father, Andy Walters, and uncle, Stephen Lopez, admitted to throwing Brianna up in the air, hitting her head on the ceiling, and letting her fall back to the ground. Both had been drinking. Bruises covered Brianna's body, including bite marks from Brianna's own mother, Stephanie Lopez, but the abuse did not stop there.
She had them on her head, her face, her arms, her legs, her back. And she had skull fractures. She had bleeding brain that was old and new. She was raped anally and vaginally by her uncle and her father.
Brianna was only 5 months old when she died. The constant abuse was eventually too much for her little body to endure. The day she stopped breathing, her parents did not call 911. They called her grandmother instead.
She had several broken ribs, so just the mere fact of breathing caused her pain.
Brianna was taken to the hospital, but by the time she arrived, it was too late.
At one point, the mother blamed the paramedics that were on the ambulance that caused all this damage to her.
News of her death and details about the extent of the abuse she suffered left our borderland community in shock.
At the hospital, they had never, ever seen a baby so abused. They had never seen a child raped the way she was. at such a young age. We saw something for the first time that had never been in our experience.
We have come here to grieve together the untimely death of Brianna.
Hundreds gathered at a public service in Las Cruces days after she died.
No one paid for her burial. No one paid for her coffin. No one paid for her burial. No one even paid for the little dress that she wore in her coffin. And it had a little bonnet in order to cover some of the bruises. And so the bonnet and the little baptismal outfit she wore was donated as well.
Governor Susana Martinez was the district attorney in Doña County when Brianna died, and she vowed to change the justice system.
The part that got me the most was that if you killed a child intentionally the way she was killed, the maximum penalty was only 18 years on the books. And what we did is, of course, convict all those responsible, but we had to go beyond that. We had to change the law to make it a life sentence.
After a long fight and a community backing the bill, Brianna law was passed.
We fought for 3 years, and finally we brought the community to the hearings at the legislature and said, you have to look at me in the eye and tell me no for the third time, or pass this law. And they finally passed it.
Brianna's father and uncle received more than 60 years in prison. Her mother was sentenced to 27 and is eligible for parole in 2016. Brianna's grandmother and a second uncle were also sentenced for failing to report the abuse. Each received 30 days in jail. It's another law Martinez is now trying to change by raising the maximum penalty to 18 months.
We cannot value children less than we value adults.
Martinez is also trying to change the fact that a cage now surrounds the little girl's gravesite, a decision made by her family to prevent the community from leaving flowers and gifts for baby Brianna.
I personally called her mother and asked her if she would allow the community to donate a headstone for her, and that it wouldn't, you know, be just in her memory. She refused. I mean, she died in the very same way she lived, which was very, very alone.
During the investigation, not a single photograph of Brianna was found.
The investigator took a photograph of her, and it appeared as though she was sleeping. So when we got the photograph back, she had a big bite mark on her cheek, bite mark on the back of her head. So what they did is they touched up the photograph. And that is the only photograph that we have of her, and it happens to be the one that where she's actually in the autopsy room.
Brianna's case left a lasting impression on Martinez.
I carry her picture no matter where I am. If I'm at the governor's office, she sits there, reminding me to fight for those kids.
According to the Children's Defense Fund, a child is abused every 2 hours, and a child dies before his or her first birthday every 2 days in New Mexico.
This isn't the last case. There are more. We have to keep fighting for those kids.
In the end, Brianna's death is not in vain. Laws have been changed, and so have the lives of the people who did not even know her. Yet, the unimaginable abuse baby Brianna endured throughout her young life is a tragedy Governor Martinez wishes never happened.
Brianna was here today.
Well, you know, this new case seems every bit as gruesome as this Martin's case, you know, in which this young girl was sexually attacked and then murdered by her own mom. So anyway, let's take a break here. Remembering baby Brianna, whose mother is about to be released, believe it or not. And there, I'll come back and tell you a little bit about how people reacted to that. 718 Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450, 805-6180-2 text. We'll be right back.
If you should miss any train, you miss the quickest way to get to Harlem.
All right. So there was a protest for the release of the mother of baby Brianna. K-O-A-T.
An infant raped repeatedly by her father. The girl's own mother did nothing and received a 27-year sentence for not stopping the abuse. In October, Stephanie Lopez will be up for parole. Thousands of people have signed a petition asking the parole board to keep her behind bars.
They basically said their hands are tied, which I understand there's nothing anymore that they can do, but people, they're at a loss for words. They're very upset about it.
We talked to Natalie Puccio on Skype. She's from Buffalo, New York, and started the Honoring Baby Brianna Facebook page. Members collected more than 60,000 signatures asking to revoke Lopez's parole.
People want more to be done. They want to know how they can get keep her in jail, basically.
But a local group, the Baby Brianna Foundation, is not opposing parole.
We cannot hate her. We can't judge her. That's not our place to even do. Let her come out and rehabilitate.
The foundation works to support children and mothers who are victims of violence. They're going to have a birthday celebration for Brianna at the girl's grave in Las Cruces.
She was never able to even eat a piece of candy and be a child or play at the park with anybody. So we want people to come and celebrate in memory of her.
That event will be Sunday, February 14th. Robert Richardson, KOAT Action 7 News.
All right, so this young girl was just murdered up in Albuquerque, and it turns out that her mother was going online to find men to come and rape her, and she was getting paid for that, but she admitted she didn't do it for the money. She did it because she enjoyed watching it, and she was drugged with methamphetamine. She was molested. She was strangled, and her corpse was raped, and then she was disemboweled. She was dismembered and put in a blanket, set on fire. Should those people face the death penalty? Or should these police officers who were shot in the line of duty, murdered, should the killer of the police officer face the death penalty? 523-1450. All right, so I'm going to give up on any analysis of Hillary Clinton's health, which appears to be rotten. Let's come back and talk a little bit more about domestic terrorism. And by the way, James Woods, the famous actor who's come out as a conservative, or I don't know if he's Republican or conservative, but had been a student at MIT and supposedly has an IQ of 170, whatever. He has said that he's not going to watch the NFL anymore because they're allowing the Kaepernick and other protests against the flag. And at the same time, they don't allow these people to honor. For example, they didn't let the Dallas Cowboys honor the police officers, which strikes me as an absurd standard, but those are the times that we're living in. That's political correctness. That's Marxism when you apply it to a culture. You get absurd results. But let's come back and get a little bit more into terrorism, the difference between national as opposed to international terrorism, and also the question of what is really going on in the United States. How many of these people that we've allowed to come into the country are actual threats? 726 Kelly O'Connell Show, 523-1450 and 805-6180 to text. Text at 726, and see if we can get some temperature here for you. 60 degrees right now, very pleasant outside. We'll be right back. I just got a text from somebody who said that they didn't call in Friday, but they thought that was one of the better shows. And I re-listened to it, and I thought, you know, I'd like to do some more about that type of a show. You know, just tracking the news a lot of times it's not really the most fulfilling thing. And I thought it was an interesting topic, how the United States has changed, how our culture has changed, why it's changed. what we can do about it, if we should do anything about it. All right, let's get back to ISIS and America and this terror cell. Okay, you've got an attack in Minnesota. You've got an attack in New York and in New Jersey. And the claim is that from the mayor and the governor of New York, New York City and New York, there's no international aspect to this. Seems like kind of a coincidence. But anyway, here's a little bit on the Minnesota mall attacker, an ISIS fan.
ISIS has used the word soldier to describe a man accused of attacking shoppers at a Minnesota mall. CBS News has identified the suspect as Dahir Adan. Law enforcement has not released his name. Nine people were stabbed at the shopping center Saturday night. The possible terror attack happened shortly after the explosion in New York City. Dean Reynolds is at the Crossroads Center Mall in St. Cloud, northwest of Minneapolis. Dean, good morning.
Good morning. The victims of Saturday's attack range in age from 15 to 53 years of age. All of them are expected to survive. The mayor of St. Cloud said the man involved, identified as a naturalized American citizen from Somalia, is dead because an off-duty police officer was in the right place at the right time.
We are currently investigating this as a potential act of terrorism.
Police say Saturday's attack began just after 8 p.m. when Dahir Adan, a college student in his 20s, entered a Sears store on the mall's southeast corner. A law enforcement source tells CBS News he asked people if they were Muslim and used a knife to stab those that they were not. The rampage ended minutes later at a Macy's store where Adan was shot and killed. Jason Faulkner, an off-duty Minnesota policeman.
His heroic actions are exemplary. Having witnessed what he did, not only did he fire, the suspect went down, he came back up on three different occasions.
This guy comes out, he's African-American wearing a blue or black security outfit.
Ryan Schleep had just entered the mall when he was attacked.
I knew he was going to strike me, so I tried to brace myself for it, and then he just did one fast motion to the side of my head.
Schleep fell to the ground and watched as Adan continued through the mall.
There was no, like, official lockdown or alarm going up. There was no mall security anywhere.
Minnesota is home to the largest Somali-American population in the U.S., one which has been heavily scrutinized for its threat of domestic radicalization. Adan had lived in the United States for a number of years. On Sunday, Somali and Muslim community leaders gathered to condemn the violence.
Any evil is evil. It does not mean that if that one person does anything bad, it's representative of everyone in our community. It's very wrong.
Why is it that if there's a religion involved with a violent attack, you don't even have to ask yourself what religion? Why is it if there was a lone wolf somewhere in the United States or anywhere else in the world, lone wolf, that you would assume and probably 99.99% chance of being correct that it was someone motivated by Islam? What is it about Islam that inspires violence? And why haven't Muslims, as opposed to getting up and giving speeches after these events and saying, don't look at us, why can't they change their religion? What is it about their religion that cannot be changed? I don't get it. I mean, is the fact of the matter that it's just a violent religion and you just have to suffer the consequences? And, the president and the members of his staff, his regime, whatever you want to call it, seem to stand for the proposition that we have to take these people in because it's who we are, and any other details he's not going to mention, he's not going to comment on. He doesn't say anything today about the bombing. And nobody seems to ever really get super frustrated with this guy and really just write him off because the media never does that, you know? The media will be the first to tell you that Donald Trump is the next Hitler, but a person who has actual authority in this country and doesn't seem to use it very often to deal with these situations just seems to get a free pass. But my question is, you know, what should the you know, the official policy of the United States be towards members of a community or a religion in which these people can just spontaneously decide they're going to start killing people. Even if you bought into the idea that a religion had the right to press for the deaths of people, save people that don't agree with it, what right would they have to do that outside of a justice system? I mean, you know, it's just so many things about Islam are so primitive and just bloody. And it seems like this president turns it around on everybody and says, Islam is a religion of peace. Anybody who disagrees with me can go jump in the lake. Now, here is refugee resettlement issues and focus after Minnesota attack. There are many places around the country in which the resettlement, the forced resettlement, or the, like, all of these Somalis going to New York City, I assume that's on their own decision, but issues where a number of these people getting together overwhelms the community. The community doesn't know what to do because in our history, we haven't had to deal with this. 737, check this out from Fox.
Fox News alert, ISIS now taking credit for a stabbing attack at a mall in Minnesota.
The suspect in St. Cloud was born in Somalia. There's his picture right there on the left-hand side of your screen. Moved to the United States 15 years ago as a child. Police say he's 22 years old or was 22. He was shouting Allah and asking his victims if they were Muslim. So is the Somali refugee crisis now a terror crisis?
Fox News contributor, U.S. Army veteran Pete Hegseth lives in Minnesota and has been looking into this and has done stories on this before. He joins us. Mm-hmm. Sadly, Pete, this does not surprise you.
No, it doesn't. I was in St. Cloud, actually, on Saturday, familiar with that community. And if you live in Minnesota, you're familiar with the Somali Muslim population that has grown here, refugees who came here in light of the civil war there. Minnesota is a very welcoming place. The problem is that a lot of those communities have not assimilated the way we would want them to in Rochester, in Minneapolis, in St. Cloud. There's an incubation. There's some radical mosques. There's some radical teachings. And as we've seen from U.S. Attorney Lugar, he pointed out very clearly, there is a terrorist recruitment problem in Minnesota, and much of the Somali Muslim population is in denial about it. This kid came as a refugee, came as a kid. You can't vet a kid for extremism. Right. The problem is the ideology looks to be ISIS inspired at the very least, as they call him a soldier of the caliphate. So this is a terror problem in Minnesota, and our leaders are nowhere to be found on it.
Well, you know, you're not the only one who has made these observations. The governor of the great state of Minnesota, Mark Dayton, has heard that before. But, he had this to say a few months ago regarding trouble there. Listen.
This is St. Cloud. Everybody here has a right to be here as much as anybody else. And if you can't accept that, then find another state.
Okay, so what's your message to him?
The message to Mark Dayton is, if you can't control this problem, we need a new governor. The reality is the citizens of Minnesota should have the ability to make sure their families are safe, their schools are safe, their streets and malls are safe, and that if people are here, they have an allegiance to our state and to our country. It's just like Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton and Angela Merkel who want to open up the borders and say, anyone come in, it doesn't really matter if you learn English or if you invest in our culture or if you become a fabric of our community. There's a very real problem here in Minnesota with that assimilation. Both sides can do more with it, but the reality is we need more from the Somali Muslim population calling out the radicals and saying, you need to get out. And the leaders here saying, we've got a problem. We're going to confront it. But a lot of voters, they don't get a say on where the refugees go.
Right.
You want to be tolerant and welcoming. You also don't want to get stabbed on a Saturday afternoon.
All right. So there's the issue. And the issue could be just the same here. What is to be done about the crisis of ideology and violence in this country? I mean, if you import enough of these people, you're going to have an American caliphate. You're going to have Sharia law. It's just what they want. So why are we doing this to ourselves? Why do we just stand back with our mouths open and watching as the president does this stuff? I mean, it seems like you have a House of Congress, Senate, and the House of Congress and the Senate, both of them are Republican, and they don't seem to do any, you know, it's just, why elect these people? Is it a hard problem? Yes, it is a hard problem. Is it a crisis? Yes, it's a crisis. What do we need to do about it? I don't know. We need to talk about it. We need to get some of our best thinkers involved in this and come up with an answer. I don't think anybody wants all of the Muslims in the country to be driven out, but is the Islamic community in the United States taking responsibility for what's going on themselves? Or did they just want to be here and pretend that they didn't know anything was going on? You know, this is an internal problem to Islam that once these people live in our culture becomes an external problem in the society with X number of people killed every year. How long are we just going to just sit here on our hands like this stupid Minnesota governor and say, these people are welcome in our community, and if you don't like it, you don't have anything to say about it, get out of here, leave. That's not leadership, it's abdication. 742 Kelly O'Connell, Amos Cruises, AM 1450, 523 1450, and 805 6180 to text in. We'll be right back. It's Kelly.
Good morning.
Morning. Who's this?
This is Becca, and I called you last week.
Yes.
And the reason I'm calling back is that...
Becca, did you know you're not on the air?
No. Okay.
Hold on. Hold on a second. Did you want to say what you're going to say on the air?
Yes.
All right. What are we going to talk about?
What I talked about last week, which is there's a war. There's a war. It's a third world war.
Oh, okay. All right.
And
okay, well, let's hold it. Okay. Like the movies, hold it. Let's hold your first shot for the film, and we'll be right back.
Okay.
All right, thanks. A couple of questions. If you're in the mall and some guy, black guy, comes up with a knife and says, are you Muslim? What are you going to say? If you're a Christian, are you going to say I'm a Christian, or are you just, you know? And it also reminds me of the Second Amendment. The reason more people didn't die or get stabbed there was that this guy who's a cop happened to have a gun with him because he was a cop. How can you not therefore be for the Second Amendment? Isn't that a large part of the answer to this problem? Thanks for the call, Becca. And you wanted to talk about the Third World War that you see coming.
Yes, the Third World War. It has already started.
We're listening.
And the terrorist idea is to bring the war to us now.
All right.
They have brought it to Europe, and now they're going to bring it to us. And you mark my words, they get here, they supposedly come from a place, and they want to come to a good place to live.
All right, Becca, Becca, are you saying, when you say they, are you saying Islam? Who are you saying? Because the last time we talked, you put it into kind of Christian biblical terms.
Yes. It is the Muslim religion of Islam. And even they have done studies and they have percentages, even the moderate Islam faith, they want to come here and they want to change us. They want to make us Islam. They want to make us follow Sharia law. That's their purpose.
Right.
And like I told you before, this is a cancer that metastasizes.
All right.
In time.
Okay, but hold on, Becca. I understand that. But you had said previously that there was a prophecy out there that this is the Third World War. Could you get into that a little more? I mean, what are your sources on this? Whose prophecy is it?
Online, if you go online, there are people that have quite a bit of knowledge who have even worked in the government. And they're saying it's not a question of if. It is a question of when.
But we will.
Is this a biblical? Is this a claim of biblical prophecy, or is it a? I mean, what religion is it?
This is Christianity, and when you talk to people, or when you're online and you're studying it, because I've done a lot of research. And it doesn't matter if it's a prophecy. It doesn't matter if it's the way that the faith of Islam feels. It's going to happen.
Why doesn't it matter if it's a prophecy? I mean, isn't a prophecy a statement of what's in the future?
Yes. Yes.
So why wouldn't it matter? I mean, it seems like if you're saying this is going to you're saying that no matter what anybody else says, this is going to happen. There's going to be a third world war in America, because, and Muslims are going to bring the third world war to America. Is that correct?
That's what's going to
how
happen.
How do you know outside of the claim of it's a prophecy, you're saying it doesn't matter if it's a prophecy. How do you know this is going to happen?
I know it's going to happen because of the research that I've done. And right now in Europe, it's starting to get to the point where people are really noticing. And in Germany, I just saw recently where they have a commercial, and they're asking women, maybe you should go ahead and wear Muslim garb. Then that way you won't be sexually attacked.
Right.
What's that all about?
That's a conversion by the sword, used to be called. You either do what we do, or you're going to suffer the consequences. Anyway, Becca, we're running out of time. Can you, if you're going to
okay.
Thanks for the call. Can you call back a little bit earlier next time so we have more time?
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you, Becca. All right, folks. We'll take a break here. I want to give you some weather. Now, this is interesting. I'm seeing AccuWeather says 55 degrees. My sources say, my app and my phone, 60 degrees. September 19th, it's supposed to be 95 degrees today and 61 tonight. So who knows? We'll take a little break and come back. And I have one more clip for you. We must face reality about jihadi plots on U.S. soil. Good calls from Becca there, 750. We'll be right back. AM Los Cruces, AM 1450, 523, 1450, and 805-6180 to text. We'll be right back. 44% of unmarried men in Japan are virgins and 42% of the women, and that's up 10%. You're getting a society that has become non-reproductive. 753, and here is Gorka on jihadi plots on U.S. soil.
Fox News alert, 8 people have been stabbed in a Minnesota mall. It happened last night by a suspect who shouted Allah during his rampage. He asked one person, are you a Muslim? Here to weigh in is Dr. Sebastian Gorka. He's professor of strategy in irregular warfare at the Institute of World Politics. He's also the author of a terrific book called Defeating Jihad. Dr. Gorka, great to see you this morning.
Good morning.
So is this attack what it appears to be?
Well, look, this is a very, very disturbing confluence of events. In New Jersey, we have multiple devices. Only one of them exploded at that Marine Corps run. Fortunately, the runners were delayed, so nobody was injured. Then we have the New York device and the second pressure cooker device straight out of the playbook of Al-Qaeda, if you look at the Tsarnaev's Boston bombing. And then we have this attack at the shopping mall, which is again, echoing other jihadist attacks, whether it's in Mumbai, whether it's in Africa. We have these instances of jihadis asking their victims, are you a Muslim? Can you recite parts of the Quran? Do you know who Muhammad's first wife was? And if you can answer these questions, you are released by the terrorists. And on top of that, the shopping mall attack is straight out of what Israel has been suffering since September. They have been undergoing the so-called knife intifada, with scores and scores of attacks where an individual doesn't need a gun, doesn't need an IED, right, grabs a knife and just goes after you.
So you follow this stuff for a living. So tell me if this is my imagination, but it seems like Minnesota is the location of an awful lot of terror plots or terror attacks. Is that true? And if so, why?
Yeah, absolutely. It is one of the highest concentrations of individuals from places such as Somalia. As a result, we've seen over the last 15 years the recruitment of individuals from that community who have been arrested and intercepted prior to an attack occurring. So, yeah, there is a demographic issue with Minnesota that, if you go back in time, is linked to places where organizations such as Al-Shabaab recruit Al-Qaeda from North Africa, from the Somali region. So, again, this is another indicator. This isn't just random violence at all,
right,
Tucker.
So I think a rational person would conclude that our refugee resettlement and immigration policies have a direct effect on our physical safety. I want to ask you about last night's attack here in Chelsea in New York City. Mayor Bill de Blasio came out almost immediately and said this was intentional, but there's no obvious connection to terror. Do you think that was a fair assessment this early?
I think it's an absolute pathological knee-jerk reaction in which the narrative always has to be away from what is the obvious and what is the truth. We saw this after Orlando. What was the narrative for more than a week? Can't be a terrorist, can't be jihadism. Omar Mateen must be a closet homosexual exacting revenge against his Hispanic lover. The FBI totally disproved that again and again and again. The Philly attack, when the officer was shot multiple times, what did the mayor of Philly say? Right after the chief of police said this is jihadi terrorism, the mayor of Philly said, nope, not terrorism, it's just a crime. That's the White House narrative. That's the liberal narrative. You have to disconnect as rapidly as possible from what it probably is, because otherwise you have to face the reality. We are at war, and the war is here in America, Tucker.
Now, I know you're not a psychiatrist, but give me your assessment of why the impulse would be not to face reality.
Because if you face reality, you have to admit that the multicultural policies of the left have utterly failed and have endangered our citizens. And secondly, when it comes to the administration, if you admit reality, if you know that in 2015, this is from a Duke University report published recently, 2015 saw the highest number of jihadi plots on U.S. territory since September the 11th. So if you admit reality, that means that our national counterterrorism policies have utterly failed, and that cannot be admitted publicly.
So admitting it is to assume culpability for it. So there is a pattern here. This is not a series.
Of course, there's a pattern. We have leadership from people that don't have our best interests in mind at heart, and they're going off this stupid multiculturalism, which is the same as globalism, outline, and it's a total disaster, and we're all put in danger by it. I mean, is that not the most obvious thing? All right, got a text from religion and stupid people are one and the same. Get rid of both and your problem solved. Also, Becca is a kook from, of course, our old buddy Frankie, who no longer is allowed to call. Apparently, he got in trouble with his mom. 7:59, Kelly O'Connell, thanks for tuning in. Have a great day. And we'll take you out with some Duke Ellington, Take the A Train, in honor of our friends in, that's the Harlem train, the Harlem line, our friends in New York. We'll be right back. We'll be back in 22 hours. Ciao.
If you should take
a train.